Let's go ahead and get started. I start with, and by the way, my name is Jim Selby, and this is the workshop on the writing, specifically looking at the ProGym and ProGymnosmita, and we're going to look at some sub-skill sets. And I've got a question I want to ask you, but before I do that, I start with this slide and in this title because I do believe that when God created us, one of the unique gifts that He gave to us was language. And so one of the points I'm going to make, one of the arguments I'm going to make, is that we should not be graduating a single student who isn't competent at writing. And that's a very high and lofty goal, but I think it's achievable. And I think it's incredibly important in terms of who we are as classical Christian educators that we don't neglect, right, a fundamental aspect of our humanity that God gave to us, and that as educators we've been given the duty as stewards to develop that within our students. And as we'll get into, one of the huge issues I have with modern composition theory is that it reduces the writing process to a very narrow scope and purpose, and then we largely ignore the much broader functions of language, oral as well as written. Okay, and my question to you now that I've got that out of the way, how many of you are familiar with the ProGymnosmita? Maybe are using it currently in your schools in some form? Okay, but some of you are not real familiar with it. Well, let's start then with defining terms. The ProGymnosmita is a Greek term, and it means the before exercises. And it meant the exercises that students did before they got to rhetoric. Okay, and depending upon the sophistication of the speaker, you'll hear it pronounced ProGymnosmita. And when people pronounce it that way, you're dealing with a very sophisticated individual who's well-educated. I'm a high school teacher from Kansas, and I say gymnasium, not gymnasium, and so I just say ProGymnosmita, ProGym for short, so we'll get that out of the way. Descartes said in his rules, in the subjects we propose to investigate, our inquiries should be directed not to what others have thought, nor to what we ourselves conjecture, but to what we can clearly and perspicuously behold and with certainty deduce. For knowledge is not won in any other way. I think those of us in the classical education environment realize that much that has happened in education in the past 150, 200 years is based upon conjecture. Right? People get interesting ideas and they do them in the classroom, and it's not a sound way of thinking or discovering truth. And so when it comes to writing, I would suggest the same thing. Right? We need to be intensely careful with this language development that we're educating our children in, that we do it right, that we do it in a way that brings glory to God and allows our students to enjoy Him. So that at Whitfield, and I as an educator, my end or purpose in writing instruction is to equip every student with the ability to write with compelling clarity. Okay? To say it another way, with coherence and cohesion. Okay? And with that as a goal, then I believe that we're fulfilling Milton's definition of learning, right, which was to repair the ruins wrought by our first parents. Of course, that goes on to say, in order that we might know God aright. Okay, and so that's our end as writing instructors, or that's my end as a writing instructor, is to, in order to do that, that means every student. And so we need a curriculum that can get us to there, right? So to give a brief historical perspective before we get into the technicalities of the skills, we have four extant versions of ProGymnosmitas available today by four different authors. What that tells us is that the ProGymnosmita was never monolithic. Okay? But that different teachers used it in different ways. And frankly, we see that today. Even today, those who are using the progymnasium at a college level or in a high school level or below are using it in different ways. And that's not out of the ordinary. Okay? We can trace it as far back as 100 BC for certain, although I think with reflection, it's got to date back to the Golden Age of Athens. It's got to come from there. Aphthonius, which is the progymnasmata that I use and that we use at Whitfield, he came along in the 5th century and he wrote his curriculum, his series of exercises. And within a generation or two, it becomes the standard. Okay, so that within a couple of generations of Aphthonius, his is the only progymnasmata that's being attached to the rhetorical manuals that are being printed. Right, so I come to the conclusion there that he got it right really well, and was convincing enough in the way he did his progymnasmata that everybody began to use his rather than any of the others that were available, and there were many available. Okay, in the 16th century, a Protestant scholar by the name of Lorick translated it into Latin and then added additional examples of his own. Okay, and I'll get a little bit more into that in the next slide here. But essentially, we've got about 20 centuries, right, of a curriculum that's being used across cultural and historical times in various situations successfully. Okay, so the progymnasmata is a very flexible and adaptable curriculum that's been used in many different cultural contexts successfully. And I'll go back to Lorick for just a moment because I'm astounded by this every time I think about it. Lorick's edition went through 100, or Lorick's translation, I'm sorry, went through 185 editions over 400 years. Okay, his Lorick's edition is printed late into the 19th century. The last edition we have was printed in 1876. It's found as far afield as Mexico, as well as throughout Europe and the United States. So it truly, and even the Roman Catholics used it, right? Which is amazing because we have copies that Lorick's name is scratched out. And his description of his university, which was a Protestant university, that's scratched out in these Catholic editions. But it was so successful that it was used even across that huge divide, right, in the 16th and 17th centuries between Roman Catholicism and the Protestants. So that the mark of an educated person has always been the ability to write and speak well. If a person could not write or speak well in the past, that would be a mark of ignorance. Okay, and I would maintain that we've lost that. Right? We simply don't make writing a part of what an educated person is any longer, largely because we failed at it. We simply are not graduating writers. I'll talk just a moment about modern composition theory to give us some context of the specific skill sets that we find in the progymnasmata and why it's so different. In modern composition theory, there are four types of writing, and you guys look like a relatively young audience. You may not have been taught with modern composition theory. It's kind of a misnomer at this point because we moved into what's called process writing. But when I was in high school, I was taught a narrative, expository, argumentative, and descriptive were the four types of writing, and there were five modes of development: comparison, contrast, cause and effect, description, and exemplification. Okay. Now, as far as the truth of that, that's an accurate way to analyze writing. You know, you can. There's nothing false about that. It's true. However, as a pedagogical method, as a pedagogical tool, it simply doesn't work. And we, you know, that's obvious. We simply need to look around. From the 19th century, 1900 onward, we begin to see a slow and gradual but consistent eroding of the ability of students coming out of high school to write well. Until we come today to the fact that, well, you know what, I'll get to that in a minute, some chilling statistics. Now, Cicero said way back when that the most difficult aspect of writing was invention. That was the thing that kept students from writing well, was invention. Okay, the most important aspect of it. And so a writing curriculum has to teach students how to invent ideas. Right? If the writing curriculum is not instructing and equipping students with the ability to do invention, the curriculum will fail to achieve that 100% level. Right? We're gonna achieve a 50 in our schools, a 50, 60, 70, 80%. Right? And a really good teacher, gifted teacher, can even get us close to 90% using modern composition theory, just because they're gifted. And they keep a high standard, and they do a lot of practice, they spend a lot of time, we're able to achieve that. But what it's missing is essentially those layers or tools of invention that the rhetorical teachers in the past referred to as topics. Right? Topics are the place where arguments hide, and we have to go find them in topics. It's where we hunt and capture our arguments. And topics can be taught. Right? Aristotle, that great systems builder that he was, wrote a book on it, a treatise on it. And he, at the beginning of that, he states, our treatise proposes to find a line of inquiry whereby we shall be able to reason from opinions that are generally accepted, okay, about every problem propounded to us. Now think about that for a minute. The other important aspect of communication training, writing training, is that we have to begin to teach the students how to think about their audience. Because what Aristotle is saying here is, if I'm going to convince you of a proposal, I've got to do it from your perspective. Right? I've got to get to where you're thinking, where there's some mutual agreement, and then we can move from there, because we learn things going from the known to the unknown, not vice versa. If I argue from the unknown, we're never gonna get to the known. And so the point of the topics was to find those points of agreement, right, where one can begin to build discussion, one can build argumentation that will persuade, that will actually get people to change what they're doing now, right? To correct evil or to promote good. And also shall ourselves, when standing upon an argument, avoid saying anything that will obstruct us. Okay. And you know, we're small enough, so if there are any questions or comments, feel free to jump in. And this might be a good spot to ask any issues to this point. Okay, let's get into to specifically the progymnasmata. And the progymnasmata, a way to think about them, are pre-topics. Okay, these what we do in the progymnasmata is we're not so much training our students how to begin to find the common arguments, but we're giving them a base or foundation in which they can generate arguments, and those arguments themselves will lead them into the topics that they can find agreement with their audience. Okay, but still, the key here is that we're giving students categories of invention. The progymnasmata teaches students where to find ideas, where to generate those. Because 80% of us who are not natural writers, right, we just cannot find our arguments. I was an English lit major. I loved literature, but I cannot tell you how many hours I sat in front of a blank page, not knowing how to begin or where to go. Okay, I just did not have the gift of writing, and I had to learn it through trial and error. And it was only God's grace that allowed me to persevere. Well, you know, for those of you who are natural writers, that's really hard to understand. But for 80% of us, this is what we deal with, right? And so the fundamental and first genius of the Progymnasmata is it's equipping students with categories of invention, right? The Progym does that with 8 different skill sets through these 14 stages that Aphthonius developed. And when we look through the first 7 stages, the fable through confirmation, we find 6 heads of purpose and 8 heads of development. Okay, for those first 7 stages, we're focused on basically on 14 topics, in which over the period of Whitfield from the 4th, 5th, 6th, and most of the 7th grade, that's what we're teaching, is 6 heads of purpose and 8 heads of development. And it takes us that much time, right, for students to master this, to get it into deep, long-term memory, to where they can pull from it unconsciously and generate lots and lots of ideas. Then from the common topic through the law, there's over 30 heads or topics that we teach our students. And then what we've done at Whitfield, and it's not, there's lots of precedents for this. During this process of using the Progym, we also introduce the heads of, figures of description, figures of speech, and figures of thought, all of which, right, if we think about them and look at them, they're just, again, topics of invention. They're categories that students can use in order to generate ideas. And we're right back to Cicero, that master teacher, who said, this is the key, this is the most difficult part of writing or speaking, that ability to invent ideas. And the Progymnasmata focuses entirely on that. Okay? It's very specific, very direct, and very intentional in building this fundamental skill set for composition. What I have found universally, whether I'm talking to a fourth grade teacher or talking to an advanced teacher of rhetoric. I've become friends with a German scholar by the name of Manfred Krauss, who has graduate students in rhetoric, and they too enjoy the Progymnasmata exercises. Okay, it is work, and we don't always enjoy work, right? But students don't hate this, they don't find it frustrating. And I'm talking specifically about those fourth and fifth grade boys, right? Who we can just destroy the love of writing if we're not very, very careful. And the Progym allows us to do that. Okay, and the reason that's the case is because we're taking a set of skills and we're breaking it into sub-skill sets that can be mastered, right? So we've eliminated the frustration in the writing process if we can make sure that we give students a task that they can do. I wish I had my old writing teachers here to give this talk to, right? Because they would so often give me things to do that I had no idea how to do them. But the Progym does not do that. It breaks the skill sets down into sub-skill sets. As we begin to think of the Progym not as an ancient method, but as a modern method with good, sound pedagogy, this is important. Nationwide, since 2005, when both the ACT and the SAT began the voluntary essay portion of their college entrance exams, right? Voluntary. So the kids who are taking this, first of all, are college-bound kids that think they can write. Otherwise, they wouldn't take the essay. Most don't take the essay. Of that self-selecting group, since 2005, only 22% of them have scored an 8 or better. Okay, and we get our scores from 2 leaders who give them a 1 through a 6. A 4 shows competency. right? So a four is a coherent, cohesive essay. That gets you a four. 22% is all. Okay. Using the progymnasmata over the last 8 years at Whitfield, since 2005, all of our seniors have taken it, and we have 100% success rate. I wish it was because I was a brilliant teacher. It's not. It's the curriculum. Right? And I'm talking, this includes those engineering and math students, right, who can't work their way through a room of people without getting tongue-tied. No, they learn how to write competently. Questions?
100% is four or above?
Yes, four or above, right. One of the things that I quickly realized is I cannot create a 12. That students who get 11s and 12s are naturally gifted writers, and I cannot create them. But what I can do is I can take everybody else and get them to 8. I can teach them how to write, whether they're gifted or not. We've talked about that. Ideas drive good composition. Right? A lot of times people will enter into the discussion of style in terms of writing, but I believe that's a fundamental misunderstanding of the rhetorical process. Style is determined by the audience, okay, not by the writer or the speaker. It depends on who we're talking to or who we're writing to should determine the style that we take in terms of approach. So it's not style that marks a good writer, it's idea generation. It's good ideas and plenty of them mark good composition. Okay, so let's look at the fable and narrative more closely and see what skills are being taught at this very beginning level of the writing process. And for us, that begins at the fourth grade level. That's when we introduced the progymnasmata at Whitfield Academy. And historically, there's lots of precedents for beginning at that point. And one of my arguments is that's when Aphthonius intended his progym to begin being used, is that early age. The sub-skill sets that get taught when we do a fable and narrative go back to Aristotle's rhetoric, where in the first chapter of his treatise on rhetoric, he makes the really interesting comment that the most important and fundamental component of rhetoric is the enthymeme. And he says everybody out there who's teaching rhetoric and is ignoring the teaching of the enthymeme is missing the boat. Okay, that was a very difficult thing for me to understand when I first read it, because for me an enthymeme was a syllogism with one of the premises missing. Okay, and that's true, but enthymeme in Aristotle's sense was much broader than that. And if we think about the Beatitudes and how Jesus uses the syllogism with the missing premise when he says, "Blessed are the poor, for they shall inherit the earth," right? What happens there with that missing piece is that you and I as an audience, we fill in the part that those who inherit the earth are blessed. And we just do it unconsciously. Well, what's happened there is we imaginatively have entered into that discussion, right? Aristotle says, see, that's the most important and fundamental piece of communication, is drawing your audience in, getting them into the process. And when we give a general demonstration of something, the audience, in order to create meaning out of it, has to become part of it. So when Jesus gives his parables, those are enthymemes. Those are general demonstrations where you and I become the prodigal son as we hear the story in order to get meaning out of it. Okay. Well, that starts right in the fable and narrative stages. That's where we begin with our students, and we begin with teaching them how to sequence, how to resequence, because we'll take a fable and not only will they have to paraphrase it either from memory or from a broad outline, but then they'll have to tell that story in a different way. Start at the end of the story and go backwards to the beginning, start in the middle, so that they become very adept at working with narratives. Okay? We teach them how to amplify, right? How to take a single short story and fill lots of time and space with it, with details that can be vivid and engaging, or to condense it, right? To tell it in as few words as possible. We teach them point of view, right? That you can take a story and you can look at it and tell it from multiple points of view. And that subtlety not only creates good critical thinking, but it also helps that artistic process and that ability to get into an audience's point of view or other people's points of view to tell this truth. We also will move from prose to prosody, right, which develops facility with language, converting fables into poems. And then the three parts of a story that Aristotle identified as essential for any good story: recognition, that ability to go aha, right, or click, and that can be anything as dramatic as us realizing that Oedipus is actually the criminal that he's searching for himself, or to have a good description of a tree and go, wow, yeah, I know what that looks like, I can see that, right? So that's recognition that has to be there in a good story. In addition to that, that concept of reversal, right, where the high and the mighty are brought low, or the humble are exalted, always part of any good story, and then suffering. Okay, these are three fundamental components that if you leave those out of a narrative, okay, it's not interesting. We lose, and so fundamental sub-skill set, as early as the third, fourth grade, we begin to teach these to our students through modeling, example, and repetition. Now, if we were trying to teach these skill sets at the same time that we were acquiring them to invent their own story, okay, we would lose about 80% of our students, because they would become so engrossed with the invention of the ideas that they could not possibly begin to master these skill sets. So again, one of the geniuses of the ProGym is that we're giving them the ideas, right, at this early age, and they don't have to invent those. Okay, we'll gradually teach them how to invent ideas through the ProGym. And at the same time, we teach them the six categories of narrative invention. These are six pro-topics, right, topics that if we ever took a journalism class, we learned as those six key questions. But in fact, these are the categories that a student uses in order to invent a narrative. And they will do this day after day after day in the future as we move through the more complicated and complex skill sets. But we begin it here, right? So students learn that these are the components that they can use in order to invent stories. Okay, what modern composition would consider supporting points. Okay, this is the foundation of that. And this is true for both that enthymeme, that general demonstration of the truth, and also what Aristotle called signs or particular demonstrations, what you and I would consider or use the term example today, right, in which there are particular people, particular places, particular times we use to demonstrate an argument. Okay, questions at all? Good. I'm either being really clear or very confusing. Okay, so then the next stages 3 and 4, the Crea and Maxim, we've got these basic ability now of these students that we've been training over the last 2 years to invent stories. Now we focus or shift that ability into more particular modes. Okay, and these are what Athonius calls the 8 heads of development. And these include the general demonstration, what he labels a cause, right? So if, in his example, he's demonstrating in the Crea Maxim, the proverb, the root of education is bitter, but its fruit is sweet. Okay, that's the idea. And the cause that he gives is a story about a schoolboy, right? And he describes the day of a schoolboy. Okay, that's his general demonstration. And again, for you and I to make meaning out of that, we have to become the schoolboy. That's the genius of the communication event there. In addition to that, we have the converse, which is a general demonstration of the opposite. And we have a general demonstration of an analogy or a comparison, something that's similar but different from. He uses an analogy about a farmer, right, who works hard at planting his crops and weeding and watering, and then finally produces a great fruit. That to him is like the boy who learns through the suffering of education to become eloquent. Okay. And then a particular demonstration, right, which is a concrete person in real place and time. The students have to create that story. So those are the four narrative topics that the Crea Maxim teaches. And then in addition to that, there are two paraphrases that are taught, right? The paraphrase by the student himself, and then the head called the Testimony of Ancients, which is simply a paraphrase by a famous or notable person. Okay. We add to that the introduction, in which we begin to give the student an example of an introduction that's based upon definition, okay, and a thesis statement. And then the epilogue at the end, which will, again, subskill set of a transition sentence is being taught. So we'll do Crea and Maxims all through the sixth grade. That's what we do. So fable and narrative, fourth and fifth, Crea Maxim at the sixth grade, right? And at the beginning of each year, by the way, we always review all of the previous stages, right? So we get that repetition. Okay. Yes?
You've got a very tight set of goals and things that you're accomplishing for your students. What do you do with new students who come in the middle?
We do a summer school in which we require them to attend. It's during the month of June, and it gives them an introduction to the vocabulary and some practice. But like in many of our other subjects, it's hard to integrate new students. It's not a smooth transition, right? And so one of the things that the ProGym is helpful for, because we review all of the stages at the beginning of the year, the students get that. And when they come in later, at the encomium stage in the eighth grade or the ninth grade, they're doing thesis and law, the skill sets that are being taught there do use all of these previous skill sets, so the students get lots of repetition. Okay. And then as we do our beginning, middle, end of the seventh grade year on, the students have been equipped to write a five-paragraph essay, which we then use as our assessment tools class after class. So they get lots of opportunity to learn, and we as teachers have to just take a little extra time in order to teach them these things. So we've been doing it a lot at Whitfield. We get a lot of transfer students. Takes time, takes effort, but we've been successful integrating them into this writing program. Okay. So these eight heads of development that we've just talked about would correspond to those five modes of writing in modern composition theory. Okay. So if we think about that for just a minute. We've taken 3 years, right, in order to develop the skill set that basically is assumed when we're using a modern composition approach. In other words, we'll explain to students, you know, what a comparison is, or cause and effect, or exemplification, maybe give them a couple of examples in a lesson, and then ask them to write it, to do it. You see the difference. We've taken 3 years to get to that point, right? Teaching all the way these skill sets on how to invent and how to come up with an exemplification, or how to do a contrast, or how to do a comparison. It's the difference is huge pedagogically in terms of...
You continue your further instruction through high school.
Yes. Yeah, we'll do the ProGym through the ninth grade. Depending upon the class, we may go into the 10th grade a little bit and then we begin rhetoric. Okay. Refutation confirmation begins for us in the seventh grade, and this is probably the most difficult stage that we have found to teach. We're taking a huge leap here in terms of mental development and complexity. During this stage, they're actually inventing their own arguments. We're beginning that art of argumentation here. And it is the most difficult to teach. But again, we've been successful with it. Okay? Work the curriculum, work through it, and we end up with students who know how to invent all sorts of arguments. The lesson, the exercise itself, again, has an introduction in which we continue to teach them how to do what would be what we might consider an encomium introduction or an introduction of definition. There is a narration paragraph, right, where we're continuing to review that narrative skill. So that still is part of their process. And then we teach them what Aphthonius calls six heads of purpose topics around clarity, possibility, plausibility, consistency, propriety, and expediency. Okay, now I'm not going to get into a lot of detail there because normally I would take about an hour to have you guys go through it and I'd have you write them. And they would, slowly it would begin to make sense. These are very intuitive, right? And they're not difficult. We just haven't been taught how to think along these lines, but once we do, it becomes clear, oh yes, of course, yeah. And we can begin to catalog arguments that we see into these six broad categories. Did you have a question? Okay. With the mastery of this skill, that essentially allows the invention by a student of a thesis, or what we might consider or have learned are topic sentences that begin paragraphs. Okay, that's the correspondence. Their heads of purpose allow students to create good topic sentences that argue their thesis. Right? And so now at this point, what we've got is a student who can do an excellent five-paragraph essay, right? Because he knows how to do an introduction, he knows how to do a conclusion. Now we have a thesis, and their arguments, right, are always cohesive with their thesis because they're generating them using six heads of purpose, arguing the thesis. So constantly that consistency, that cohesiveness is always there. And then within the paragraph, they've got their argument that they're developing with their heads of development. So everything they develop, right, all of that is their thesis, is their topic sentence. So you've got coherence within the paragraph. Right? Single idea, fully developed. Excellent paragraph. Okay, any questions there before we move on? So in this first half, these first seven stages, we've given them the basic skills that they need to move on to, again, more particular types of argumentation. Okay, so that in classic composition theory, any communication is always serving one of three purposes. We're either arguing what was or was not, you know, a forensic speech, what is or is not, an epidectic speech, what will or will not be, right, a deliberative speech. So from stages 8 through 14, we're beginning to teach them specific topics along those three lines of argumentation. Okay, and the first seven stages have given them that foundation of invention, right, that allow them to invent ideas that now will focus these inventions into one of these three different types of communication. Okay, so the common topic is focused on the forensic speech, arguing what was or was not. And this is truly a delightful experience for junior hires because the common topic is always negative. It's always destructive, and they love it. Right? They just love to get in and tear things apart, and that's what the common topic does. It's similar to invectives, but directed to a general type of evildoer, such as tyrants, drunk drivers, and one of the favorite topics of Whitfield students are the student who cheats. They just love to rip that idea apart. And it includes an exordium, which would have that thesis statement. And instead of an introduction that's using definition, we begin with this stage to teach them how to do an introduction based upon arguments. Okay, so we're equipping them with two different types of introduction as well. Then within the body of the exercise, there's three narrative heads, right? We're reaching back and we're using that ability to create an enthymeme or an example and funneling it into the contrary, which is a general story about the evildoer, the exposition, particular story told in the first person like a soliloquy, and then a comparison paragraph, which is another form of an analogy, again in a narrative format. And then that's followed with three argumentative heads, so we continue to review that ability to invent arguments, and these are based around intention, which is calling into a question the intention of the evildoer, why are they doing this, a digression, which is a conjectural abuse of the subject's past, and that's a favorite paragraph, and then finally a rejection of pity by juxtaposing it with another idea or victim. Okay, and then finally the concluding paragraph again, which is made up of this of six arguments, and interestingly enough, Aphthonius renames four of the heads of purpose, so that consequence was clarity in the previous stage. Possibility remains labeled the same. Legality was the plausibility head, right, renamed. Justice was the consistency. Honor, the propriety, and expedience remains the same. So I think one of the things that Aphthonius is doing by renaming the heads like that is he's showing us the flexibility and the universality of these types of arguments. Okay. Then the 9th, 10th, 8th, 9th, and 10th stages. The next three stages are the encomium, invective, and comparison. And all three of these stages are teaching a single skill set. Okay, and this has to do with the epidectic argumentation, dealing with particular subjects. Again, we have an introductory paragraph, right? It's the most sophisticated yet because now we're teaching them to do an introduction that includes both definition and argumentation. Okay. So we're getting quite sophisticated here in the eighth grade level, right, of how to introduce, how to exhort as we begin a communication event. And then there's a birth or origin paragraph in which the students are taught to develop both generally and particularly around both place and person. Okay, so we're getting two categories of origin that the students have to invent within, again, general and particular. And one of the things that you'll notice as we go through here that Aphthonius is constantly, right, structuring his argumentation around the general and the particular. And again, that's straight from Aristotle. Right? The functions of development in terms of the purpose of the speech. Then there's an education or achievement, development paragraph, three very subtle categories of invention. Again, that's stretching the student's ability to reason and imagine. And it is very sophisticated, but with time, repetition, and modeling, right, these students are developing some excellent ways to think persuasively and argumentatively. Then there's a comparison, and also that achievement section. Okay. All of those are done within the narrative format. Okay, so each of these heads are going back to the crea maxim fable narrative stage and reintroducing, repeating, and giving them review for those skill sets. Questions or comments? I'm throwing a lot at you here, but I want you to get a sense of the cohesiveness of the 14 stages, how intricately they are vertically integrated. Okay. It's literally taken me 8 years to figure out where I am now. I'm not the brightest person on the block, but it's there, right? The skill sets are there, and so I apologize for so much information, but I want to give you that overview. Question?
Yeah. question earlier. There's a lot of reference to middle school and junior high and stuff like that. And would you implement this if you were starting at high school no matter what? Because I know that this is kind of designed for, you know, an upper school. I don't have. When I get a ninth grader, what do I do?
Yeah. Yes. No, you start with the same thing. When I came to Whitfield 8 years ago, my upper class was a combined 10th, 11th, and 12th grade class. Thankfully, we had just one senior, and she was a very gifted writer. She got the first 7 stages of the ProGym, and she graduated. The other two classes, the 10th and 11th grade, went through all 14 stages in 2 years, and I saw significant improvement in their writing over those 2 years. Okay, and again, here's the flexibility. At the college level, this ProGym is being used for both remedial freshmen coming in, as well as advanced rhetoric classes. And these 14 stages get taught in a semester with success, right? So it's a very flexible, very effective curriculum, even if you have a limited amount of time to implement it. And the older they get, with the more writing that they had, they do pick up on these things quicker, right? Because again, as you get into this, it's not rocket science. It's very intuitive. It fits who we are as people and is how we communicate. It's very natural. And so these skills do get picked up. Okay. Now, I will say that the longer I've done this, the better writers we're producing. Right, so we're getting more nines and tens rather than clumped around the eights like we have, you know, in the first year that we did it. Does that answer your question? Okay. So this now, this encomium vective comparison is typically taking place in the eighth grade. That's where they're learning this. And we finish the eighth grade year with characterization. Characterization introduces a sub skill set around style. Okay. So one of the key aspects of teaching characterization, besides the emotive benefit, is a style of writing. And as Athonius says, the style taught in characterization is a style that is clear, concise, colorful, unconstrained, not intricate or figurative. Okay. One of the advantages of the ProGym is when we get done with it is you will have students who can write in multiple styles. Okay, they know how to do that. And that's a huge advantage in communicating. Right? To be able to adjust one's message in a way that the audience can get it, that can engage them. Okay. The categories again are past, present, and future. Skills of sequencing continue to be developed, and as I said, that particular style is achieved, interestingly enough, through a continued use of paraphrase and an abbreviated word count, is how we are able to pass that sub skill on. Then in the ninth grade, they do description, and as Athonius writes, I'll quote, an expository discourse which brings the object exhibited vividly into view. In description, one should adopt, and here's the style, a free, relaxed style and ornament it with different figures and in general hit off the objects being described. So what you find with this, interestingly enough, with this detailed description, it's very fast-paced. It's not tedious, it's not slow. We teach them how to describe with great vividness, but it's a very rapid moving description. Okay, it's really delightful as they achieve this. It's done through a multitude of details, never dwelling upon a single object, but moving quickly. Lots of figures of description, figures of speech, and we have an expanded word count. So in characterization, they're always coming to me and saying, oh, Mr. Selby, we need more words. I can't get it down so brief. And I say, yes, you can. Go back and rewrite it. And with description, they're always coming to me and saying, we can't add any more words to this. We can't think. Yes, you can. Expand your word count. And lo and behold, they're able to do this with effort and work. Okay. So that both of these stages continue to train students through the use of the heads of purpose and development. right? Character development through soliloquy and description, through exposition, right, is what we're getting here. The narrative and the descriptive, or expository. Now, I'll just say, no, I guess I won't, I'm out of time. Thesis and law is the capstone. Okay, we introduce the concept of counterpoint, right, where students are forced to think about good opposing arguments, and then they resolve those. So there's wonderful critical thinking going on here, multitudes of arguments that they've got to develop, both for and against the topic that they're doing. So they are really impressive at this point with their ability to argue and think well and communicate it in a way that's vivid, colorful, and engaging, right? There's an easy transition from the thesis and law into extended research papers, right, in the 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. That's a very easy transition. This looks a lot like an academic essay without the research. Okay, they've invented their arguments, but it's an easy transition. So in terms of academic writing, we've given them now the ability to write excellent five-paragraph essays and the ability now to write extended research papers, right? But we've given them so much more. We've given them that basic ability to invent and develop arguments across a multiplicity of environments. So not just academically. Right, when we do a really good job with modern composition theory and we're able to get that 80 or 90% success rate on the SAT or ACT essay portion, we've still taught them very narrowly because that's academic writing. Okay, what the ProGym does is it really opens that up and we're really teaching them about human communication. And they are, by the way, they can focus that academically and write excellent academic papers, but we've also produced excellent letter writers, right, either to their friends or to the newspaper, and so forth. Layering topics of invention upon topics of invention, right, vertically integrated, giving them skills they can master, and then increasing that ability over time until after 5-6 years, we do have competent writers at this point. They can go into rhetoric, being able to focus on the audience, not worried about inventing and developing their own writing skills. They've got that. Now they can channel that depending upon what the audience needs. So as I said, five-paragraph essays, literary essays, research and thesis papers, lab reports, biographies, creative writing, poetry, reviews, letters, journals, essays, books at some point. That's what we've equipped them to do. A very wide range of that communication process. And that includes every student. We've only been doing this for 8 years at Whitfield. That's really not a long time. Maybe 45 or 50 graduates, not a lot. But we've never had a failure yet. And we've had some pretty tough nuts to crack in those 45 or 50. Okay, and we're just empirically, right, we're just the tip of a 2,000-year history of success. So I would urge you to consider, look, research, continue to read. I'm happy to take calls or emails. I'm very passionate about this, but there's lots of other people that are getting passionate and are passionate that you can also tap for resources. Thank you very much.